Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Cornelius Hunter, a graduate of the University of Illinois, where he earned a PhD in biophysics and computational biology. In addition to being a fellow at Discovery Institute and an all-around great guy, Dr. Hunter is an adjunct professor at Biola University and author of the award-winning Darwin's God, Evolution and the Problem of Evil. Dr. Hunter's other books include Darwin's Proof, and his newest book is Science's Blind Spot. His interests include the theory of evolution, including the historical, theological, as well as the scientific aspects of the theory. His website is www.darwinspredictions.com, and his wonderful blog, which I highly recommend, is darwins-god.blogspot.com. So, Dr. Hunter, thanks so much for coming on the show with us today.
Thank you, Casey. My pleasure.
Well, I'd like to focus our conversation today on junk DNA and the ENCODE project, which I know that you've done a lot of thinking and writing about. It's also a topic I'm very interested in. In fact, you've had a lot of spectacular posts on ENCODE at your blog recently, including one that I'd like to read an excerpt from our listeners to kind of set the tone for our conversation today. You wrote a blog post about a recent talk given by Dr. Dan Grauer, who's a molecular biologist at the University of Houston. And here's what you said. You said, quote, ENCODE has always had a love-hate relationship with biological junk. When scientists discover something new in biology but don't understand it, evolutionists, who believe everything in the universe just happened to form by chance, decide it is a useless evolutionary leftover. Such a useless design is pressed into service as an evolution apologetic. Is not our useless and dangerous appendix yet another proof text of Darwinism? Later, when the function is eventually uncovered, evolutionists begrudgingly admit to it while maintaining that its clumsiness still proves evolution, unquote. So I love the way you framed the issue, Dr. Hunter, in that a lack of function supposedly proves Darwinism, and then when they find function, that proves Darwinism too. So maybe you could just explain to our listeners, what is your interest in the topic of junk DNA, and how does it play a role in the debate over evolution?
Well, right. So my interest in junk DNA is not so much proving or disproving it or showing that DNA is all functional. I have no problem with some or even most of DNA being non-functional and indeed being junk, if that's what it turns out to be. What's really interesting about junk DNA is the way evolutionists handle it. And as you read from the blog, they have this kind of interesting love-hate relationship with it. That may be too strong a way of putting it, but the point is they will use it as an apologetic, another proof text of why evolution must be true. And that is really the basis, the underlying foundation for the justification for why they believe in evolution is the dysfunctionalities of the world, the dysteleology, the evil. It doesn't work right. God wouldn't have created this world. So junk DNA or worthless DNA, rudimentary functions, rudimentary structures, biology in general, these all play right into and in fact are inspired by that underlying metaphysic that the world is viewed as not being designed, not working correctly and so forth. But then, as you mentioned, inevitably, it's not wise to bet against Mother Nature. And the history of these claims of disutility and dysfunction and dysteleology ultimately meet their demise. It seems as though we always find function for these structures, whether it's at the morphological level or the molecular level. And that's where things get even more interesting, because what you'll find is evolutionists won't back down. Great quote from Richard Dawkins on our backward retina, which, as you know, for years, it's not the retina itself that's backward, but the photocells, the rods and cones, which are backwards with the light sensing part of it at the far end. So the incoming light has to traverse the length of the photocell before impinging on the light sensitive molecule. And that always seemed backwards. And in fact, it's the cause of a blind spot in our retina and so forth. So great apologetic for evolution. But in fact, when you find out, it actually works pretty well. In fact, there's all kinds of design built into those photocells and design reasons for why it's quote-unquote backwards. And so Dawkins starting to acknowledge that as he writes this one particular quote, and he writes, "It is the principle of the thing that would offend any tidy-minded engineer." So it really doesn't matter whether it works or not. And so these rudimentary structures that evolutionists defined in the 20th century, according to many evolutionists, it had to be non-functional or close to non-functional. But in fact, things like gyroscopes on bumblebees, extremely complex advanced designs, because they are in a place where the wing, they would expect the wing to be, evolutionists say, well, that's the rudimentary wing. So even something like that, they will say, well, this is evidence for evolution. You quickly realize, as I was in years ago kind of trying to parse out the arguments for evolution, I think, what are they saying? Because they're all over the map. You realize, no, non-function is really not relevant. It really is not what's behind the argument. It's really a much more profound metaphysic that evolutionists are declaring, which has to do with aesthetics, design aesthetics. And this isn't the way the world would be designed. That's really what the bottom line claim is. And it's a very interesting claim. I wouldn't poo-poo it. When I explain this to audiences, sometimes you get chuckles, you get laughs, and people put it down. Let's take it seriously and take it for what it is. I do think there's flaws in the argument, but it is an interesting argument, and who knows, you know, maybe there is reason to believe that secondary causes have creative powers that evolution is claiming that they do. But it's a metaphysical argument. That's what we really have to understand here. And until and unless we understand these things, we're not going to understand evolution, and we're not going to understand the state of science, because science has been infected and has always been infected with this non-empirical rationalistic thinking. We'll call it metaphysical thinking. We're making very profound non-empirical, these judgments that do not come from experiments. You can't get this from an experiment, and that doesn't mean it isn't true and doesn't mean it's worthless, but evolutionists want to claim the higher ground of empiricism. That this is all just science. And when they say science, they mean empirical science. They mean it comes from experiments and observations and just logical thinking and mathematical modeling. That's all there is to it. Well, no, it really isn't. In fact, that's not at all what evolution is about. Evolution is much more a philosophical, theological program, which makes it non-testable, which is exactly what evolutionists critique other theories as being.
Well, I definitely agree with your comments, Dr. Hunter, that this argument regarding junk DNA has become almost an aesthetic one. And there's a slide in Dr. Dan Grauer's presentation, which I think you and I will talk about in just a minute here, that talks about what would an intelligently designed dining table look like versus what he calls an evolutionary functional dining table. And in my view, I think either dining table would work just fine for eating off of, but he apparently thinks that one is not the way it would be designed and another is the way it would be designed. But let's get to that in just a minute. The background for our conversation here is the ENCODE project. You have been writing about the ENCODE project and about whether or not it shows that the vast majority of our genome is in fact functional, raises a lot of interesting questions. So I'd really like to just ask you a couple of quick questions about the ENCODE project, Dr. Hunter, if you don't mind. What was ENCODE, and what did ENCODE discover that was significant about the human genome?
Well, it has to do with analyzing the human genome, and it's actually not one particular project. It's a set of projects. It's a pretty big endeavor. And the main finding, I think, that's inspiring Grauer's talk and the attention of evolutionists is the finding that most of the human DNA, contradictory to evolutionary expectations, is copied or transcribed, is the biological term. But so the DNA is a double helix, and when you have a gene in your DNA, that gene gets copied and turned into a protein by first making a copy. So the DNA is unwound, that double helix is unwound in a fairly complex operation, very complex operation. And a massive protein machine called RNA polymerase makes its way along the DNA and makes a copy of it. And then that copy is called RNA, and then that's used for various purposes. That can be used to make a protein according to the genetic code, or the RNA can go off and work as an RNA gene product and do something useful. So a lot of things can be done with this copy, but what evolutionists expected was only a small fraction of the human genome would be copied. because only a small fraction, say 5 or 10%, was actually useful DNA. The rest was a junk of some sort. The key finding here from ENCODE was that something like 3/4 of the human genome is copied. And that was kind of a shock for evolutionists. They thought, wow, is this actually useful? Is all this DNA doing something? So ENCODE kind of made the conclusion that, yeah, junk DNA is on the way out. But there wasn't a hard and fast conclusion, and they kind of backed off when they got some questions and some heat. It's by no means conclusive, but it's a very interesting piece of data that suggests that there's a lot of non-protein gene products from our DNA that are doing things that we don't understand. There's a lot we don't understand. So there's one camp, the parts of the ENCODE team and others in evolution, who would think, okay, so maybe more of the DNA is useful. Okay, fine. And then there's Grauer and other evolutionists who just can't believe that, and their explanation would be that the copy machine is out of control. Or, getting back to our discussion of rudimentary structures and useless structures, that there is actually some use for some of this extra DNA that's being copied, but it isn't very important, and it was junk DNA that was being uselessly copied. And then, of course, as evolution would have it, mutations arose and it found some sort of function and then it was preserved via natural selection. So you have some kind of low-level functionality going on in that 50, 60, 70% of the genome that's being copied. Maybe some parts of it are actually finding some use. So it's kind of a mix of junk and low-level function and of a copy machine that's out of control. It kind of fits with the overall evolution paradigm. All of biology is a claptrap that just is a fluke and things are just happening for no reason. And so there's all this DNA just being transcribed. I think from a history of science perspective, you're really taking a chance. You're really going out on a limb because, as history has shown, we are finding function for these things. And we're going to find function for this. And what they're going to say at that point is, oh, well, this is junk DNA that got a chance and it's turned functional. And so evolution will be just fine. And that's what's kind of interesting about Grauer's talk. Another slide that you probably will get to, Casey, is where Grauer said, it's either ENCODE or evolution. I'm being short there, but what I mean is he said, either ENCODE is wrong about its conclusion that most of the genome is functional and there's not very much, if any, junk. Either ENCODE is wrong about that or evolution is false. So you got to give him a little bit of credit for taking a stand like that and actually making a prediction, taking a stand, an epistemological stand, so to speak, standing up evolution up against the evidence and making evolution falsifiable. That's admirable, but it's not going to hold. It's simply not going to hold. Grauer is not going to carry the day there. What's going to happen is the functionality will be found for some or a good chunk of the DNA, if not all of it, and evolution will sustain that just fine, thank you. It will not be falsified. There's plenty of explanations that evolutionists can draw from. If they can explain what we found so far in biology, they certainly can explain that without any trouble at all. Of course, I don't mean to say that evolution would make much sense on those explanations. I'm simply pointing out that evolution is so malleable and can sustain contradictory evidence so easily and come out with new and improved explanations, which really are drawing on tremendous amounts of serendipity and just sheer luck and sheer astronomical, unlikely odds that the theory really doesn't look very good, but it's just not vulnerable to those things. It simply is not vulnerable.
Yes, Dr. Hunter, I think the exact words from Dan Grauer in his presentation were as follows. He said, quote, two problems. If the human genome is indeed devoid of junk DNA, as implied by the ENCODE project, then a long, undirected evolutionary process cannot explain the human genome. If, on the other hand, organisms are designed, then all DNA, or as much as possible, is expected to exhibit function. And then he goes on to say, these are his exact words, if ENCODE is right, then evolution is wrong. So, yes, I do think this is a very strikingly candid statement that we don't usually see, and I completely agree with you that what's going to happen is they're probably going to continue to find evidence of function for more and more DNA, and folks like Dan Grauer will eventually actually back down, not on evolution, but on the prediction of evolution, that it predicts that we're going to find all this junk because they don't want to give up on their evolutionary theory. What they want to do is find some way to retain it. I think that you're probably right on as far as what they're going to do in this situation over time. Nonetheless, you know, you can't rewrite history and change the fact that ID did predict that we would find more and more evidence of function for the human genome, and that many Darwinian evolutionists, in fact, I think arguably the evolutionary paradigm itself, predicted that we wouldn't. So I think that let folks be the judge of what happens in history, but the reality is that I think that evolutionists are not going to be quick to give up on their theory. They're going to find a way to sort of put it in an unfalsifiable position to accommodate all this evidence of function that just keeps coming out and coming out and coming out. Well, we're running out of time for this first podcast with Dr. Cornelius Hunter on ID the Future about ENCODE and junk DNA. Be sure to check out Dr. Hunter's blog. It's darwins-god.blogspot.com. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Stay tuned for more with Dr. Cornelius Hunter, and thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.